Well, well, well. Chucho Valdez with Zoe Knowles Mambo. I really do enjoy that. Chucho Valdez, of course, is from Cuba and did much and has been doing much to promote Afro-Cuban jazz. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and today we are going to be talking. Consider this a kind of extended Free Your Mind Friday. Think of it as Free Your Mind Thursday. We will be talking about the issues that have been shaping your view. The current political climate certainly is impacting our attitudes, and our attitudes inform our actions. And so what are you thinking about the stories that have been in play? What is happening to where you stand politically? What is happening to your way of thinking? This is where we're going today. We continue the discussion we started yesterday on that front. So much is happening. It's hard to even just choose one thing to say, well, this is the most important thing. These stories and the news developments are happening in such a way that, I mean, they're kind of coming together. I don't know whether it's the force of the universe telling us something, that things are coming together for a particular purpose to inform us about what it is we ought to do, what it is we ought to think. And we should be talking about these things. And this is the purpose of this program, to talk about these things, because we have so much to offer. We have a great deal in our experience and expertise to draw from, and we can share our thoughts and ideas. What is important to keep in mind is that you shouldn't be afraid to express your opinion. There's no such thing as a right opinion or a wrong opinion. It is a matter of whether it is an informed opinion. And, of course, your experience informs your opinion, your research, your exposure to life, all these things form an opinion. And it is in that spirit that we talk here on this program. So I encourage us to engage in discussing things from that perspective, that you're expressing an opinion. And we do this with mutual respect, of course. We talk to each other openly, and we should not feel constrained simply because we think people might disagree with our point of view. And even when people disagree with the point of view, it is expected that respect is given to the point of view with which they disagree. Those are just the ground rules that we observe here. It's also important to engage in a discussion, whatever it is you think you'd like us to consider, because we know this is not, you're not indulging in just flights of fancy and you're not just being silly. You're engaged in community building. This is what happens. And we are not used to that kind of thing, frankly. I remember in my previous radio life, people used to wonder, are you listening? Yeah, listening very intently to what you have to say. Because there is very little room in the normal scheme of things in media for people to actually participate in the discussion and for people to advance their own ideas. And this is why PRN is a very serious purpose for the program, to devote a great deal of time to encouraging your input and your participation. This is how we build community, and I remark very often that we don't have enough of community building occurring in our world. You know, people are doing things all over the place, but it is important for us to connect, and the best way to connect is to share ideas. So what are you thinking about the news, issues, and events in play, or about anything else that basically should be looked at a little closer? I'm interested in hearing from you about that. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. And let's continue the discussion from yesterday. What we talked about yesterday were these developments. We know that the issue of terrorism is very much in play in the United States because of the attacks last week in San Bernardino, California. And I was coming from the point of view that these may very well be acts of terror in the way that we define it. The idea of inflicting a great deal of pain and harm to individuals who are perfectly innocent, but for the purpose of scoring political points and making a political statement. And this is what differentiates acts of terror from out-and-out, regular, standard-issue American violence. It comes with a particular message. I did talk about the fact that when the media presents this event, this tragedy, as an act of terror, and one of the most pernicious acts of terror in recent memory, they do a disservice, and it is part now, it takes on more than just this business of reporting. Journalism now becomes an active part of governmental propaganda. The media, it seems to me, should be doing its job of independently cultivating information, independently looking at these developments, and particularly at this situation, from its own perspective. Obviously, all situations of this type will involve some governmental agency or the other, and you can't avoid that. But it seems to me that overwhelmingly, the sources, I think, the coverage, and this is across the board, the sources cited are governmental sources, and they very often are not named. And this raises a great suspicion in my mind about not only the veracity of the information, because it's so one-sided, and number two, what is the purpose and intention to have the media as an institution taking a leave of its senses by basically abrogating the duty to, you know, put some kind of a distance between it or media outlets and these governmental agencies that are providing the information? And this is what I think should be raised as a question at this time. What is the role of media? If essentially what we're getting is a insulation from purely governmental sources and very little evidence that the media organizations themselves are engaging in journalism so that we can have a more credible appreciation of what the facts are. But they handed over their institutions to government and are parroting whatever it is they get from, quote, official sources, unquote. And this is very troublesome, because now we are fully in propaganda mode. And so I think it is incumbent upon media institutions at this time, and particularly in circumstances like this, where people are correct to look to these at this information with a great deal of suspicion. It is perfect that the media organizations step up their game and act like media people, and rather than jump into this simply for the acclamation of being the first to report this or the first to report that, simply because you're the first people told by the CIA what you ought to now tell the people, I think it is time for the media people to practice journalism. Well, from Brooklyn, Dave, what are you thinking today? Hello, Dave, you're on the air.
Yes, this is my ad in New York.
Dave is on the air.
Yes. Do you hear me?
Yes. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
I'm glad to hear
today?
That. A lot of things you say are unbelievably true and very eloquent. You really speak the truth, and you make it plain, which is great.
Thank you.
But as far as the media goes, they're not going to change. That's all rigged, and that's not going to change.
Why do you say that?
Because we're never being told the truth. And you had a caller on Wednesday. I don't remember her name. I hear her a lot. I hear her on other programs, one other program that only could talk about the things you're talking about on a commercial station. And she's brilliant. The first caller you had Wednesday. I forgot her name. She talked about conspiracy, not theories, real conspiracies. And she would be made somehow incredible, because that's what they do. That's how the system's rigged.
What are you reacting to right now in terms of media coverage?
I don't watch the media, because I know I'm going to be lied to.
Okay, but what is having an impact on you in terms of what is widely known by press reports?
What happened in France, don't you think it's a little coincidental that it was near the French election? Their new prime minister, president, whatever they want to call their puppet.
Well, we do have an interesting similarity here. In France, there's been a very, very rightward swing in France. It's homophobic, it's xenophobic, it's Islamophobic,
yep.
It is all kinds of phobic, but it is very hateful. And we have that now mushrooming in the United States right now. For example, Donald Trump is far ahead as a presidential candidate, and largely because he is said to be expressing the views of a silent majority. People are identifying, supposedly, according to the polls, they're identifying with his hateful and xenophobic and Islamophobic utterances. What do you say to that?
What do I say? He's the host of an elaborate game show, so he shouldn't even be taken seriously, and everyone's taking him seriously.
Yes, so...
And the punchline is you're fired of his show. I never watch it. I just know about it.
But this is the conundrum. Despite all of this, he is a game show host and so forth. Well, he no longer is. They fired him from that. But at the same time, this is the situation. In your view, he doesn't merit this serious attention, but he nonetheless has it. So
yeah, because
this is a conundrum.
I have mentioned the dumbing down of the country and the world, especially this country. That's why he's far ahead.
All right.
You think
he
should be far ahead? I think this is all bull, and probably Bush is going to end up being the candidate, and who wants another Bush? It's all set for Hillary, I think. And I certainly don't want her.
Well,
she can't even get in a debate, or a so-called debate. understand my conundrum.
Where does that leave you? I mean, right now you're clear more so about what won't happen and how what you don't feel about certain candidates. But where does that leave you then?
Leaves me in limbo. You want a specific question, I'll answer it.
But what will get you out of limbo, you think? What would be the thing that would get you to move out of where you are?
The people rising up, going against the powers that be, that have everything rigged, but I know that's not going to happen.
Uh-huh. Well, thank you for getting the conversation started today. Thank you very much for calling, David. Appreciate it. Let's head to New York City again. Jay, you're on the air.
Yes.
Yes, you're on the air.
Yes, Shutree, sorry about that. I just think that the whole media thing is propaganda, totally. I mean, the manner in which they present stories, the manner in which they report them, the opinions of the hosts are mostly slanted in one direction, and they never give both sides of the equation or allow the public to even in the back of their mind think that maybe people around the world see Americans as terrorists for what they do in their country. You know, they never talk about what it takes to really create a terrorist and the reason for terrorism, you know? And they always are so busy to jump to the conclusion when it comes to race that it's always people of color's fault. It's just a wicked, wicked organization, as I would say. But the one thing that I guess I've learned from you is that it really, really boils down to just money. That it's not about really disseminating honest and truthful information. It's about creating a revenue stream. This is why you have someone like Trump out here the way that he is, knowing that the world will not accept Trump. Because the bottom line is, nobody will ever tolerate his bombastic ways around the world without it leading to more wars, more destruction. And basically, I believe when it's all said and done, the destruction of the American economy by other world leaders once they become so threatened by America's military power. Because if you think about it, you have Russia and China who are in allegiance with one another. You have Iran, who nobody really talks about, is becoming stronger as a nation. And, you know, you have other world powers like Germany and others who the American propaganda machine make it seem like these nations are so weak, when they're really not that weak.
Well, let me ask you to be a bit specific here. What stories in play, currently at play, have basically struck you as being, you know, in line with what it is you're discussing today? What kind of coverage has struck you, and why?
I would say off of the top of the head, the Donald Trump story. I mean, if it was really, really an honest and true media, to fight back against the things that Trump has been saying over the last couple of months would be more fierce. I mean, remember back in the day when Malcolm used to say certain things, how the media would constantly and totally attack him and tried to change the opinions of those who followed and believed in him. That type of pursuit of as they claim truth is not dealt on this level with Trump. I see it as them agreeing with Trump. I see them as promoting what Trump is saying, because there has been no discussion put forward by the media in regards to how other nations will address and deal with someone like Trump if he was to gain the office of POTUS.
Well, I mean, I have to point out, of course, that we have had critiques of Trump in the press. Many people have critiqued his positions on any number of things. However, we still have this conundrum that I talked to David about, and that was, despite all of that, what explains the fact that Donald Trump right now is a leading candidate? And with
America's
over 60% of the vote.
America racism. America's privilege in Americans' feeling of not being in control any longer, the feeling of being threatened, looking for someone to protect them from the boogeyman, all of these things. Trump is like a scary movie. And in scary movies, if you realize, there's always someone or groups of people looking for someone to protect them from the threat. And that's what Trump is. And that's what the American public is. They're like scary moviegoers, hooking on to someone who they perceive that will protect and save them from the boogeyman. And that's it. You can't look at it any other way, because if any sane and rational person could never support Donald Trump, even if they hate America, because of the implications that are involved. So, I mean, because you're afraid and you're scared, you go to the lowest denominator now, which is someone like him. That's why, you know, I'm no fan of Obama, but I mean, we must say he is somewhat more reasonable than Trump is in regards to these situations. He's not trying to put our kids in total danger or the world in total danger because we need to be the big bad wolf. That's the way I look at it. Have a good day, Therese, and take care.
Thank you so much for contributing today. From Brooklyn, Dwayne, you're on the air.
Hey, Therese, how you doing?
Fine, thank you.
Awesome. Just a couple things I wanted to say. So Donald Trump is interesting, I think, because much like the setup of Obama, pretty much he is a white president in a black face. But the trick is that we needed that. We needed a black face, so we all voted for him. I feel that Donald Trump is a decoy in that he, you know, is supposedly being touted as the worst just to, for everybody to kind of be like, okay, let me vote for someone else, like Jeb or someone else. And the truth of the matter is that they're all the same. So it's like a trick. It's like, how do you trick the American people to vote for something that's pretty much horrible, and you set them up, you know, either make them the same race, you know, because black people could do that, could need that, or you can position someone as the worst, and then the other people will come in and take that. So I just think that's a very brilliant trick that, at least in my opinion, that's going on now.
Well, you got that said. Let me ask you, of the stories that have been in play recently, which stands out in your mind, and how is it shaping your political awareness and opinion?
Right. So the police brutality stories are the top priority in my mind right now, the stories that you were going over with Auston Maddox. So the way that it's shaped me right now, or at least my politics right now, is that I kind of am agreeing with you that we kind of need to, like, punish the Democratic Party. So now I'm trying to put together, you know, a little Brooklyn, little me. I'm trying to figure out a way how to create that kind of campaign, spread it out, and do something radical like that. So that's how it's informing my politics now. I don't know the answer to your question, though.
How has media coverage of this particular issue and the number of cases that we've been discussing, how has the coverage affected you?
Okay. What I noticed in the media coverage is that it is obviously, like you say, one-sided. So, for example, when you had Alton on the show, I noticed that he was talking from the perspective of the victims' families. But if you look at CNN and MSNBC and all Fox, they usually have, like, the police, like a talking head for the police side. And it would defend and, like go into their perspectives more. And that, for me, as a black person, I mean, that's just clear example that, you know, the media is not really, does not really care about, you know, like black folks and their plight, and that they're going to only push or mind control like people with like one side of the issue. So, I mean, basically, I can't really believe the media. So now my solution is to try to figure out how to reverse that or complement that. Does that help?
So with your understanding now, let's just say you got an appreciation for what they're not doing. You got also the polar opposite. You like the coverage that you gave here on this program. What does this do now to your political outlook, and what does it do for your political decisions?
Right. Like I said a second ago, you know, there won't be any voting Democrat. You know, I'm going to obviously work with UAM, kind of work with those guys a little bit, Olson's group, and just figure out a replacement political party, and then just try to promote that. That's, in other words, I'm going to fight for a party that looks out for me, because they clearly don't. Does that help?
That's a very good answer. Thank you. Thank you also. I don't know if you realize that you were basically sharing your own recent evolution here, right? You're talking about what you are doing because of a new awareness or more insightful awareness. And this is great. This is fantastic. Thank you so much for calling today. New York is leading. What's going on with the rest of the country today? New York, Mitch, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Retrace.
Good afternoon to you, Mitch. I wasn't complaining. I'm glad that you're from New York.
I'm calling about what's going on in Chicago now.
Yes.
With Rahm Emanuel. They wanted his resignation. Well, it looks to me like he shouldn't have gotten elected anyway, because he made a statement back in, I think it was 211, somewhere around in there, that 25% of the children in Chicago, probably in our neighborhoods, because he shut down 50 schools in the black neighborhoods, he said 25% of these kids wouldn't be nothing, and he's not going to spend a dime on them. He said that to, I think it was Karen Lewis, the lady that was who was the superintendent of schools at that time.
No, she's the head of the Chicago Teachers Union.
Okay, well, he said that to her. Yet, Rahm Emanuel carried 60% of the black vote in every district in Chicago. He carried them, regardless of what he said about their kids. He carried that vote, which is, and following some of the comments that I've heard about Chewy, the guy that was running against him, they were saying, well, he didn't come into the neighborhood and he didn't introduce himself to the people and we didn't know what to expect and all of this nonsense. You know, like I think Harriet Tubman said something like she would have freed more slaves if they had known they were slaves.
Uh-huh.
Well, I think that's a very good analogy of Chicago and its political system.
But, you know, Chicago is like the rest of America, where you have this very same dynamic existing. You have people of color who are literally getting kicked in the teeth at all these different levels, and yet, they are encouraged by their so-called leadership to vote, which is one thing, but to vote Democratic, which is the other thing. So what do you do?
Well, I say, like, we should talk organizing. Like the other ethnic groups, they put their representatives in office, and they want them to produce. They don't put them in office and just say, well, now you're in office. They put them in there, and you got to bring home the bacon or the ham or whatever you like to eat. For instance, look at Schumer and the Jewish vote. Hey, please. You know, he would never go against anything that Israel says, as opposed to our representatives, because we put them in office, and we hold them accountable for nothing. Whatever they do, you don't even hear from these people until election time. You might get something in the mail. But I would like to hear people say, look, let's organize. Let's get a group together, and, like, whoever is elected in our district, whether where it's federal, or hold them accountable. And if they're not doing what we say, what should be doing for the community or for us as a people, get them out. You got people that it's been there for 30 years. You know, it's ridiculous. 30 years. And no change of venue. They might come up every now and then, but they don't really stand up for us as a people. You had Adam Clayton Powell, he was up there. He didn't have a black caucus. He was the only person in there. And he made a difference.
A great difference.
That we got up there.
And not only for African America. He made a difference across the board. I keep reminding people that the minimum wage is Adam Clayton Powell legislation that came up. Student loans, Adam Clayton Powell.
Student loans. Yes. And he didn't have a black camp. He didn't have a black caucus. You know, he did all of this on his own initiative, you know. But you got all of these black caucuses up there. You got all of these people, and they are doing nothing for us as a people, nothing. And I'm concerned because, like, you know, I'm looking at the Supreme Court justices. Well, you know, there's going to be a new one coming in soon because I think a couple of them are Ginsburg. She's 89 years old. She's going to be retiring soon, one way or the other.
Well, they want her to retire, and she says, I'm sticking around as long as I want to. So don't look to me to retire anytime soon.
That's too bad. Because there's going to be another justice that's put in there soon. And it could be another, let's say, what if Donald Trump gets in? Who do you think he's going to appoint? And that's going to really tip the balance. You know?
Well, you've raised quite a few things here, Mitch, but overwhelmingly, I agree with your point about this dilemma that the African-American community has to deal with, and that is, are you going to continue with this so-called leadership? Are you going to confront this conundrum that we're dealing with? You elect people, but they have allegiances elsewhere, And you continue to suffer, but you continue to support a party that compels you to suffer. I just don't get that.
Well,
thank you so much for calling.
Okay.
No, finish your sentence. Finish your sentence and, oh, you're gone. All right. Well, look, we have somebody from New Jersey speaking for all of New Jersey today. Hello, Michael. How are you? You're on the air.
Hi, you, please.
Hello.
I wanted to converse a little bit. I don't know if I could bring this out, but, you know, I'm listening to your program and the callers, et cetera, and it seems like there's vast confusion, and it's almost like a Tower of Babel, like an echo chamber that's getting distorted every time it bounces off the wall. And, you know, once we had a discussion, I said, you know, I heard this show about something behind the news. I said, what's behind the news? And people have the idea that the truth is behind the news, you know. It's in a conspiracy theory or aliens are the cause. And you know, I think this is false. I think behind the news, there's more news. It's just that the more news that underneath the news that they feed us is either contradictory to the news that they feed us, or it's covering it up. We just don't know the more news that there is. And I think we may have to resign ourselves that we're never going to know these things, and we're wasting our time by focusing on them. I don't know if I'm bringing this across.
Yes, I get your point. I differ with it, but I get your point. I agree that, I mean, it's a very nice esoteric point that you make here. However, you should also appreciate the fact that the media seem quite capable in some cases of doing the job of journalism, and in other cases, not so capable of doing the job. And it is by their own volition. They would tend to give proper context to stories. They would tend to approach stories, different kinds of stories, in very different ways, because that's when you're doing journalism. We're asking them to report, not interpret the reality, not to contrive a new reality, not to engage in propaganda. We're asking them simply to report, to do journalism. But, I mean, when the shootings occurred in San Bernardino, and I watched CNN, Chris Cuomo was just completely out of control. The whole station took on the tenor of, well, we know exactly what's going on, and everything they said was, you know, predicated on stuff fed to them. And in print, the same thing, stuff fed to them. So they completely abandoned this notion of actually going out there and asking questions and talking to people and reporting. They are now essentially the vehicles for government-based information, and that is not journalism. And
right.
That's a problem I have.
So is there an objectivity? Or is it just a narrative?
It is an objective. It's not objectivity. They have an objective. And it comes out screaming at these kinds of at these times. When the objective, as let's say with the coverage of the, we talked about it here on the program, the coverage of the so-called debates, all basically, it's about money and the anticipation that some candidates would be spending far more money than other candidates. Now, to what degree has that very fact influenced coverage and the tone of coverage by these major media outlets? What they are inclined to report and what they are disinclined to report. In fact, I saw a segment recently on CNN And I focus on CNN because it is so widely viewed as the sine qua non of journalism, television journalism. And essentially the entire segment had to do with why aren't these candidates spending the kind of money that we know they have? That's the discussion. And Donald Trump was at the top of the list. They're still waiting for Donald Trump to dig into his pockets and deliver hundreds of millions of dollars in advertising money. And at the same time, they are mad that he isn't doing it. They're giving him free, completely free coverage. He's playing them like a cheap fiddle. So
is this entirely the fault of the media? I'm just having a discussion with you. Or are they feeding a demand?
No, there's no demand. They create that as well. They create demand. They create everything. Look, you have a job. You have a license, an FCC license, and you're supposed to obey the law. The law is to provide information. And in terms of a political campaign, you know, equal access and all the other things that apply. These are the things they know. But the media have become handmaidens to the moneyed set. And in some cases, money and ideology are inseparable. So they not only give more coverage to a preferred candidate, but they also ideologically advance the cause. For example, you know, Fox News it might as well just have called itself the extended arm of the Republican Party. Okay. CNN allegedly is a liberal outfit. Makes me laugh, but that's what they say they are. But nobody's talking about, you know, we will learn more about what's going on in Jerusalem and in Palestine than we would in Chicago. This whole thing with Chicago and the police killings, these cases are well over a year old. And now they constitute a, quote, news story, so it's now, you know, the people are ahead of it, so they might as well report it. But the journalism, at the time that it was needed to expose all of these things, they had it, they were right there. They would have been able to report it if they were doing journalism, but they're not.
Right. So it's farcical, basically.
The media people have become so enmeshed in this newfangled way of doing journalism, and they it's about money. Absolutely about money.
Right.
So, and it's also about power, the power to shape opinion. But again, that too is about money, because you can get it if you can pay for it.
So is it time for us to unplug ourselves from you know, mass media?
Well,
and we don't even know what's not mass media, because, you know, sometimes I hear Gary talking about The Nation or Mother Jones, and so we don't even know what's not mass media, because what we think is not mass media might be also mass media. It might be the news behind the news behind the news, layer upon layer, like an onion, peeling that onion back, and you say, well, I'm going to get to the truth of this if I keep peeling, and it's all surface, it's another story, something's underneath it, and we're digging and digging.
Well, we don't know what the truth is of anything. Let's say, I will go with you on that. The thing that we at least should expect is a competent job. Just report competently.
Or objectively. You know, even if it's competent, you know, you could be a very competent fiction writer. You know, you have a lot of style and art in it. But it's fiction in the end.
But, you know, do a good job. Just lay out the facts. Let's get some context here. You know, things don't happen in a vacuum. And let's talk to people other than you know, this person who is with the CIA and this person who is with the FBI and this, you know, we get that. But, it, for example, the issue with the police. Or we talked about Loretta Lynch. I mean, you have a news conference, and the reporters don't even have a context to say, well, wait a minute. When you had the opportunity to do all the things that you're now promising to do, you didn't do it. You had the authority as the, you know, the U.S. attorney in Brooklyn to investigate any number of police killings in Brooklyn, and you didn't do it. Your predecessor had an opportunity to prosecute. He is the this office is the highest office in law enforcement and prosecuting people. You didn't do that?
Well, it's supposed to be the Department of Justice, but it's the Department of Reform.
Well, this is my point. So, and it didn't occur to anybody there. Nobody, that none of the reports that I saw even raised this question. And these are legitimate questions. Why would the Department of Justice from the beginning take the position that it will not pursue prosecutions?
Because they're in the business of reform. They did, you
well,
know,
but that's,
they,
that's my point. Nobody asked a question.
What
that
about
is
justice?
Not competent reporting. The competent reporter, a reporter there doing a competent job, she said, well, you have unilaterally ruled out from the beginning. You're not discussing prosecutions of anybody at all. Why?
That's gone by the board already.
All right, so that's my point. A competent reporter would have asked that question, and it should have been expected that the question
should have been
asked.
And no one asked that question of Loretta Lynch, right?
No, no.
Nobody in the media asked her, well, what about pursuing justice in this case? Why are we just jumping to reform? That may never come about.
Okay,
I mean,
so
the reform is in the future, right? This is something out there in the future that may come about. It may not. It may get diluted.
That's my point. If you had competent journalism being done, somebody would have found it immediately disturbing that here we have the nation's top prosecutor absolutely avoiding the topic of prosecution. And they all, like, you know, stenographers, they were assembled, they dutifully listened to what she had to say, and then they reported it. And what was the story? Across the board, the story was the Justice Department initiates a probe. Okay? So we get this kind of bipolar approach to reporting, but it is by design.
Well, you know, people, I think part of it is people are conditioned to accept explanations. And if she explains it in the sense of saying what her job is and what her job isn't, and it's sort of like she's reading a resume of her job description, which is to look into the issues of systematic abuse, et cetera, through statistics, through, you know, we're going to bring in sociology here, and we're going to get the graphs out, and we're going to look at the numbers. And so that this is all becomes a very mechanistic, deterministic kind of thing that's going to be...
You're being really elaborate here. It is really... It's so simple. It's not nearly as complex as you're suggesting. It is that these people don't really want to do good work. If a reporter neglected to ask the question at the news conference and came back and wrote a story like that and submitted it to me to edit, the first thing I would say is pick up the phone and now ask her the question. Because your story can't possibly be a legitimate story about her launching a probe when the expectation is at the center of the probe would be individuals. But the lady said right there, individuals, we're not looking at individuals.
Right.
We're not looking at this case or the other case. So the big story should have been the Justice Department refuses to deal with justice.
Well,
But what about
everybody
what about
said that the story was that the Justice Department was launching a probe, in effect assuring the public that the Justice Department was doing its job.
But are we programmed to accept these kind of explanations? We hear it on the news, and it sounds like boilerplate, you know?
Well, what it is, again, the media deciding that when it comes to certain communities, they can be lax, and the editors allow that, and the more importantly, the sales department allows it, because these communities, this should have been a huge story, that the Justice Department refuses to engage in assuring justice. The woman is saying it. It couldn't be any plainer. It couldn't be any plainer at all. She is saying, we are not going to pursue prosecutions. And nobody understood that. I don't understand. I mean, it shocked me. That's why I shared the tape, the entire statement.
Right. We're not going to get down and dirty into the streets and dig up the actual, you know, situation. But we're going to shake hands with the people in white suits and ties and have coffee and donuts and talk it over.
We'll give you a report. No justice. Don't look to us for justice, despite the fact that I am the U.S. Attorney General, the top prosecutor of the country, and I am telling you there will be no prosecutions. Don't look to me for that. And that does not constitute the gist of the story anywhere in this nation. I think only on this program did we get that angle to the story, that the Justice Department starts off by publicly announcing there will be no justice here.
No, they're in the business of reform. Which could look like anything after it's over.
So this is what we have to contend with. And because we are not vigilant about how we consume information, these things kind of move over our head. Because, I mean, if the New York Times didn't spot it, and CNN didn't spot it, and these are the big giants of news, if they're telling us the story is that the Justice Department is moving affirmatively, here's what it announced a probe, and they wrote a long story about it.
They provide a narrative. And,
yes.
And most people just accept that and say, yeah, that's not her job. You know, that's the policeman in the street's job. Her job is to give us an explanation.
Right. So there you go. And that's what I mean. It's happening literally in our faces, and we refuse to recognize what the message is, and the message couldn't be more direct, in my opinion. It is right in your face. They're telling you what you will not get.
You will not get justice.
You will not get justice here.
Yeah.
If you're looking to the U.S. Justice Department for justice, oh, man, are you wrong.
I'm here
about reforms and writing reports. We're not here to secure justice. That's a different department. That's how the world works, and that's why we always have to have our brains in gear. Thank you so much, Michael, for your call today.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Well, that brings us to the end of our program today. We will return to our usual Free Your Mind Friday tomorrow. I just thought we needed to get a leg up. There's so much to talk about. And in talking about these things, we actually are engaging in peer-to-peer education. We are sharing our thoughts, our profound thoughts. We're sharing our opinions. We're sharing our views of the world with each other. And we are building a community. And that's great. I was so impressed with Dwayne, who basically, he may not have been aware of it at the time he was saying it, but he was sharing an evolution, which is the kind of evolution, which is your eyes are opened up to a different way of seeing the world, and it therefore impels you or compels you to action. And that's exactly what we need. We don't have enough of that. And the story that I presented, this is why I do these things. It's all education. Media is a critical element of how we see our world, because they have us every day. And there you are. I mean, nobody reported it the way we talked about it here. The Justice Department has a news conference, and people think, well, it's about justice. And she's telling you. They're telling you. Don't even expect it. It ain't going to happen. If you have expectations that I, as an African-American woman, standing here before you, and you are worried about your relatives being shot dead in the street by rogue cops, and you're looking to me for some kind of relief, I'm telling you the same thing the black guy ahead of me told you, Eric Holder. Here's a report. And deal with it. This is life. And we should be really careful about the kind of information that is available to us every day. It has a purpose, and the purpose usually is to distract in order to destroy. Thank you so much for joining me today. I really do appreciate hearing from you. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. Always, always a pleasure to hear from you and engage with each other in these kinds of discussions. Coming up next, by the way, is Expanding Mind with Eric Davis. You want to keep it right here. And tell people, people in your circles, about PRN.FM and about this program. Your very, very favorite program, isn't it? Yes, it is. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.